This Week in America with Rick Bratton. Issues that matter to you. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
You need not suffer in a meeting ever again. From leadership and communication expert and co-author of the international bestseller Dealing with People You Can't Stand comes the much-talked-about cure for that time-wasting, headache-inducing, soul-sucking plague known as meetings. Dr. Rick Brinkman, author of Dealing with Meetings You Can't Stand, Meet Less and Do More, and he's our guest on today's This Week in America. Middle managers spend an estimated 35% of their time in meetings. Upper managers, half their time in meetings. And experts say about 67% of those meetings are woefully unproductive. A necessary evil, Dr. Brinkman says, they don't have to be. He joins us next on today's This Week in America.
Everybody wants cheap airfare, but where do you find it? You call low-cost airlines. Their prices are direct from the airlines, and they're so low you can't find these fares published anywhere. They specialize in cheap flights, discount hotel rooms, cheap car rental rates, and great package deals anywhere around the world. Wherever you want to go, they can help you get there cheaply and with a best price guarantee. If you want the lowest prices on your airline tickets or other travel services, call now. That's right, call. That's the only way to get these rates. Experts are standing by 24/7 to get you the cheapest airfare and hotel rates available. So don't wait. Call right now for the lowest travel prices anywhere and for great last-minute travel deals, too. Call right now. Operators are standing by. 800-298-0306. 800-298-0306. 800-298-0306. That's 800-298-0306.
Do you love watching sports? Well, how would you like to be able to take your favorite sports with you and watch them anywhere? In your house, on your computer, even on your smartphone for one low price. With National Programming Service, you can. That's right, for one low price, so low we can't publish it, you can take your favorite sports anywhere, anytime with you. And we even give you free installation and free premium movie channels. Don't wait. Call National Programming Service right now. You could be up and running and watching your favorite sports and shows in just a few hours. Remember, call in the next 10 minutes and ask about our special radio offer and learn about free installation. Call right now.
800-425-8166. 800-425-8166. 800-425-8166. That's 800-425-8166.
Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Thank you for being with us on the program today. A recent Harris poll found that the number one obstacle to getting work done is having to go to meetings. In fact, just say the word meeting and you can hear the groans. Our guest on today's This Week in America, Dr. Rick Brinkman, says there is a way to turn a necessary evil into an energizing, productive event. Dr. Brinkman is the author of Dealing with Meetings You Can't Stand, Meet Less and Do More, proven simple tactics to make your meetings focus shorter and effective. Dr. Brinkman is a leader and communication expert who teaches conscious communication for leadership, teamwork, customer service, and effective meetings. Since 1987, he's performed more than 4,000 programs in 17 countries, sharing his insights on human behavior and strategies for practical communication. Clients ranging from the Astronaut Corps at NASA, the FBI, Lucasfilm, Merck, Adobe, IBM, the Federal Reserve, and a multitude of other organizations and professional associations. A successful author, including co-author of the international best-selling Dealing with People You Can't Stand, now in its third edition, translated into 25 languages. Dr. Rick Brinkman, author of Dealing with Meetings You Can't Stand, Meet Less and Do More, with us on This Week in America. Dr. Brinkman, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us today.
Well, it's great to be here. And whenever there's a bad meeting, I'll be there.
You will be there taking notes, and you can correct that. I love the book. The book is Dealing with Meetings You Can't Stand. And the first thing you talk about that we need to do in planning a meeting is ask if this meeting really has to happen. How do we go about identifying the purpose of the meeting? And maybe there's a better way that we can communicate what we're trying to get across.
Well, one thing to look at is, are we just disseminating information or are we interacting? Meetings always should be for interaction. The Cambridge Psychological Society found the average person 24 hours after a business meeting only remembers 9% of what occurred. and of the 9% they remember, half of it is inaccurate in some way. So it's really crazy to disseminate information at meetings. It's totally valid to give information ahead of time, require people to read it, and then go into a meeting to interact about it.
What's interesting is you've dealt with a number of clients, and out of that came the book, Dealing with Meetings You Can't Stand. You developed the meeting jet process, saying basically we should approach a meeting like an airplane flight. Talk about that concept, because it's amazing, because it's sort of laid out. If we go into this visualizing an airplane flight, we can probably have a successful meeting.
Yeah, the analogy works. It's a bunch of people trapped in a contained space together for X amount of time. They might be uncomfortable. They might feel like it's a waste of time. The meeting or plane can leave late. It can go off course, can be hijacked, can arrive late. Then you miss your connections or, in case of meetings, other meetings and obligations. And, you know, you think about it. Would you get on an airplane where there was no flight plan and there was no time, and the pilot gets on and says, well, we're going to leave at some point and we're going to get somewhere. And hopefully it's where we want to go. I mean, Yogi Berra said, if you don't know where you're going, you end up someplace else.
Exactly.
So you definitely need a flight plan, and that's what the agenda is all about.
Talk about putting that together, because that really is the key, isn't it? That's the groundwork for what you're going to be discussing.
Yes, focus at the meeting begins with a good agenda, and that means, you know, what's the topic? You have to have realistic time estimates. I urge you in all meetings to have somebody assigned to just take time notes. How long did this subject actually take, which will allow you to be more realistic in the future about your agendas. Two of the most important things you could put on any item, any agenda item, is a statement of purpose. Why is this subject so important that we're all not doing 10 million other things we know we need to do? So, for example, let's say the office is being moved. So this is the item is office move. Purpose is to have the minimum impact on your team's workflow during the office move. Now you know, oh, okay, that's pretty important. And then the other item you want is a statement of focus. Well, what do you want from me? What do you want from the group? We want you to come knowing your team's schedule and consider any days of the week or times that might be less disruptive once you hear how the move will occur. So that orients people in the proper way, and that is the first step to focus and staying on course on your meeting flight.
One of the things you talk about is an allotted time frame, and so often we see meetings go off track because someone just has to get up and ramble. It's really important, isn't it, that we hold people to a certain time period, and you encourage everybody to be able to participate in talking.
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, anytime there's speaking, here's what's going to naturally happen in a meeting. If there is no speaking order, your more assertive people will dominate, they will talk too much, and then your passive people drop out. Now, I think the goal in any meeting is holographic thinking. It's what your eyes do. You know, if two eyes see from two different points of view, they're both slightly different. When your brain synthesizes those points of view, you see three dimensions. So if we get everybody to hear everyone's point of view on any subject at a meeting, we get a holographic understanding that's greater than any one person will have on their own. But if your passive people drop out from the get-go, you've already lost the hologram. And even worse, your assertive people are not usually listening. They're listening for breathing changes to jump in to say what they have to say. So there should always be a speaking order that could be voluntary. People raise their hands. We put them on a whiteboard so they know their turn is coming. Or even better, it's just a circular order going around the room. That way you're sure to hear from everyone. And then anytime it's your turn to speak, there must be a time limit, you know, 2 minutes or less. Let's say. Otherwise, you're going to have people who are know-it-alls, who do know a lot, and they'd like to tell you how much they know, and they'll take you down tangents. Or you could have judges who get real nitpicky and take you down an irrelevant tangent. But as long as you have a speaking order and you have a time frame, then those kind of behaviors can't dominate and take you off course.
Our guest on This Week in America, Dr. Rick Brinkman, author of the new book, Dealing with Meetings You Can't Stand, Meet Less and Do More. Book is available all across the country, wherever books are sold. Dr. Brinkman's website is very simple, drrick.com. You can go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and link on directly to Dr. Brinkman's website. Once you get that agenda together, something that's very important and maybe overlooked too often is who all do we need to invite to this meeting? There are relevant people that need to be there and probably others we really don't need to have come to the meeting.
Yes. You know what? If every item on an agenda must be relevant to every person at the meeting. Otherwise, you're going to have people who are being distracting and multitasking. You know, if you have a longer meeting, you structure it. So let's say we have the first two or three agenda items that require 10 specific people. Once we're done with that, we excuse five of them, and now we go into the agenda items that are just those five people. And again, this just takes a little bit of planning, but like any airplane flight, you know, you calculate the times, and you're realistic. Planes leave at 7:43, not rounding up to a number. And I think that's a good idea with meetings, too. Don't round up. Don't start on a 5. Start at 10:07, and then, you know, continue from there.
You also talk about deciding how much the meeting is going to cost. And it's interesting you say if you had like a taximeter running outside the meeting room, all of a sudden you'd be a little more conscious about what this meeting is costing because you have that visual there. Talk about that and the time-benefit ratio that goes into the equation.
Yeah, you know, when the taximeter actually comes from a group in UK where that's what you do. You key in your code when you came into a meeting room. And the computer knew what everybody was costing per minute, and a taximeter appeared on the screen, which gave people a consciousness of time. But then there's the 10 million other things you're not doing when you're at the meeting. That's really a lot harder to calculate, but all that has to be thought ahead of time, and that's part of that time-benefit ratio, is the amount of time we are taking from people to be in this meeting worth the benefit of the result of this meeting.
Right. And so often you look at this and you think maybe the more inexpensive way to go about this is virtual meetings, which we can do now. And you do pros and cons in that in the book, Dealing with Meetings You Can't Stand, Meet Less and Do More. Talk about deciding on the best format, because oftentimes a virtual meeting is really not the best way to go, especially if you don't include everybody.
Right. The virtual meeting can, it's too easy for people to multitask and not pay attention in a virtual meeting. I think you have to have some ground rules about that, that people do need to focus and not be doing other things, and the reward for their focus, you're going to get in and get out a lot more quickly. Now, all the other things apply. You know, we have to have a clear agenda and so forth and timed out. I think one possibility is you require webcams to be turned on. That will prevent a lot of multitasking. At a virtual meeting, you should definitely do circular order. Just establish, let's say, alphabetical by first name at the beginning of the meeting and just go around the room. That's going to be a lot simpler. And then you have to have a shared screen. You know, we didn't talk about this in general, but this is what I call flight recording, which is huge to put in place in the meeting. Because I'm sure everybody's heard people repeat themselves at a meeting. If a meeting is done without any kind of visual recording, and I have a point that I feel is important to the group mind, I'm going to say it a number of times as a way of keeping it in awareness. But if I say something and I see what my point bulleted on a PowerPoint slide, I see it, I see you see it, 5 minutes later it's still there. But even more is as we go around the room and we hear from everybody and we get all their points of view bulleted on a PowerPoint slide that we're sharing in a virtual meeting, or let's say we could be doing that in a physical meeting too, or it could be on a flip chart in a physical meeting, suddenly we see totality of concepts. We see all the factors, all the pieces of the puzzle, and this is how you get the group to really rise up into holographic thinking, where you hear from everybody and you take what they say and you make it visual, and suddenly you've got totality and you eliminate repetitions and you really get to the core of issues in less time and even in much more complete of a depth.
In the book, Dealing with Meetings You Can't Stand, Meet Less and Do More, the guest, the author, Dr. Rick Brinkman, you talk in the book about cage rattling, and this is interesting because so often people will go to meetings. Somebody may be listening to the program. Somebody may have read the book and say, you know, that really would be much more effective than the rambling meetings we seem to go through 3 or 4 times a week. But I'm not in charge of the meeting. How do you rattle the cage to get the attention of those who are in charge of conducting the meeting so that maybe
all
we streamline
this? All your listeners must know, everybody hates meetings. Even the person who, you know, if they did not come, it would be a better meeting. Even they'll tell you how much they hate meetings. So if you go to your boss and you say, how'd you like to hear an idea that makes our meetings shorter, more focused, and productive? It's a rare human being says, no, we don't want that. What will we do for our waste of time and misery around here? So what cage rattling is specifically it's a document to initiate that process of how to get people's attention and show them the possible benefits of doing a meeting experiment, of just trying a process twice to see what happens. Anybody is going to be willing to try something twice as an experiment to see what happens if they can make their meeting shorter and more productive. And at the website, dealingwithmeetings.com, There's a cage-rattling document there, a template that you can download to guide you through that process. And there's also an agenda template at dealingwithmeetings.com.
How important is it to start and end on time? And what is a good, well, I guess it would depend on the agenda, but meetings seem to ramble. Try to make them as concise as possible, obviously.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of factors here. One, have we tracked our time for a while so we are realistic when we make the agenda about how long things take? Two, do we have time limits to speak in speaking order so people can't ramble on and take us down irrelevant tangents? So once we have those factors in place, and then the purpose and the focus, what do you want from me, that immediately shortens the time frame. Once we visually record, people are not reading, repeating themselves, so that shortens the time frame. When you put all those factors together, that's how you meet less and do a lot more. And I'd say it's critical to just start on time and end on time. If everybody's not there, tough, just start on time. Many people tell me that their conference room door would be locked once the meeting started. No make wrong on the person who didn't make it, but it's just you missed it. You know, it's important you get there on time. And even if the agenda is not complete, you got to end on time. Learn from your experience. Why did this take longer than we think? But, you know, people have other connections to make, other meetings, other responsibilities. So we have to really respect people's time.
Now, it's interesting because you make the case that so many meetings are doomed, aren't they, from the very beginning because of lack of focus and objectives?
Absolutely. If there's no focus, if there's no agenda, if the agenda's not clear, if it's not relevant, all these things are what destroy a meeting. In fact, I found in my research of doing many, many surveys, everything falls, all the problems of meeting fall into four categories: preparation, people, process, and time. So preparation includes questioning the meeting's existence. Do we have an agenda? People are like, well, people who are know-it-alls, people who whine are negative, only look at what's wrong with things. Process, do we have a speaking order? Are we recording what people say in a visual manner to take them to totality? And then time is being realistic about time and respecting time.
You talk about, we mentioned whiteboard a couple of times here. Talk about the importance of visuals and being able to actually see something. That sounds sort of primitive with all the technology we have now, but it really is quite effective, isn't it?
It is. Visual communication has two superpowers that auditory does not. One is it remains over time. So once upon a time, I was working with an ex-couple fighting over their kid. I spent an hour with them separately, brought them together, and said, I really appreciate how much you guys agree with each other. It's really funny to watch them. They both crossed their legs and looked at me like I was crazy. But I said, correct me if I'm wrong. Do you want your child to be traumatized? Do you want your child to develop emotional problems? Do you want your child to learn this pattern of communication so they could do it someday with their spouse? Then I walked over to the whiteboard and I wrote best interests of David, and I made that concept visual because I wanted that overall purpose, that critical thing in our consciousness at all times. So anytime you make something visual, it remains over time, but then the other factor is you can see multiple concepts simultaneously. You know, we could see all the factors that people bring with their perspective to a meeting.
If you have a meeting that's focused, shorter, you feel you really got to the point, what do you do when it's over? How do you make sure that you've got an effective follow-up?
Well, at the end of each agenda item, there should be who is doing what and when. What's the follow-up actions that we're going to be taking, and who's responsible for it, and when will they take it? So that's how you wrap up every agenda item. And then keep in mind, if you're bulleting what people say, let's say on PowerPoint slides, okay, face-to-face or virtual, you have exquisite notes of what the group discussed at the meeting. So you could send that PowerPoint deck to everybody who was attending the meeting. But I think what's even more effective, let's say Yid and Joe are going to take some next steps regarding one agenda item. So we would take the PowerPoint slide that relates to their specific item they're going to follow up on, put it in a separate email, you know, extract it from the deck, make it separate, clearly label the subject line so they have the perfect follow-up notes to hit the ground running and take their next steps.
It is an excellent book, a very important book, Dealing with Meetings You Can't Stand, Meet Less and Do More. Dr. Rick Brinkman, our guest on the program, best-selling author, top keynote speaker, trainer, leadership, and communications expert. Several websites to keep in mind, drrickbrinkman.com and dealingwithmeetings.com. You can link onto both of those by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.
Everybody wants cheap airfare, But where do you find it? You call low-cost airlines. Their prices are direct from the airlines, and they're so low you can't find these fares published anywhere. They specialize in cheap flights, discount hotel rooms, cheap car rental rates, and great package deals anywhere around the world. Wherever you want to go, they can help you get there cheaply and with a best price guarantee. If you want the lowest prices on your airline tickets or other travel services, call now. That's right, call. That's the only way to get these rates. Experts are standing by 24/7 to get you the cheapest airfare and hotel rates available. So don't wait. Call right now for the lowest travel prices anywhere and for great last-minute travel deals, too. Call right now. Operators are standing by. 800-298-0306. 800-298-0306. 800-298-0306. That's 800-298-0306.
Imagine this is your money and someone wants to take it from you. Who is it? The IRS. They want your money, and guess what? They can legally take it, all of it if they want. Remember, they sent you that letter that said, hey, you owe us a bunch of cash and we're going to take it from you. So what do? Fight back by letting our team of experts at the Tax Helpline work it out with the IRS so you can keep your money. And we're good at what we do. When you hire us, you get a team of guys on your side that know the IRS laws and will fight to save your money. So, if you owe the IRS a ton of cash and you want to keep it, call right now and learn for free how we can help you put it back in your pocket.
800-932-1597. 800-932-1597. 800-932-1597. That's 800-932-1597.
Do you love watching sports? Well, how would you like to be able to take your favorite sports with you and watch them anywhere? In your house, on your computer, even on your smartphone for one low price. With National Programming Service, you can. That's right, for one low price, so low we can't publish it, you can take your favorite sports anywhere, anytime with you. And we even give you free installation and free premium movie channels. Don't wait. Call National Programming Service right now. You could be up and running and watching your favorite sports and shows in just a few hours. Remember, call in the next 10 minutes and ask about our special radio offer and learn about free installation. Call right now.
800-425-8166. 800-425-8166. 800-425-8166. That's 800-425-8166.
Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Dr. David Geyer, orthopedic surgeon, sports medicine specialist, and author of That's Gotta Hurt, providing education and commentary on sports and exercise injuries, injury treatment, and prevention for athletes and active people so you can stay healthy and perform your best. His website, drdavidgeyer.com, is a destination to get answers, get better, sports medicine simplified. And Dr. Geyer back with us on the program. Doctor, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So much more to talk about. We're continuing a series that we've done on youth sports, and you can go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and get the past programs, information on the topics, as well as other great information at drdavidgeyer.com. Today, we want to talk about focusing on fun and proper techniques, the skills involved, instead of winning and strategies. And a statistic you have that's really alarming when you think about it at your website is that 70% of kids quit playing organized sports by 13. They come in, and I can remember when our kids were in that age bracket, so excited about playing sports, and then there's a burnout there for so many. Why is that?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of pressure on kids today, mostly related to sports, but then you throw that on top of they're heading into high school at that age and the demands of school. But, you know, playing year-round, playing 5 days a week and then traveling on weekends, you know, a lot of these kids, they're young and they're just maybe not as emotionally strong as you are as you get older. And so I think that if it's not fun and if it's more about winning and you know, the pressure to succeed and thrive, I think that's a lot for kids, and they ultimately just decide maybe I don't want to do this anymore.
Should we keep score, especially for the younger kids? I'm talking, you know, 7-8-year-olds are out there playing and they're keeping score. And, you know, we're to keep a tally through the season and we're going to give trophies to the winning team. Should we focus on score that way?
You know, I've heard the argument either way. And I think for really young kids, I don't know that the score necessarily matters to me in terms of keeping it. I understand the argument, you know, why it's necessary and all that.
Yes.
But I think in the bigger picture is that we need to make winning less the goal and getting the personal statistics, the stats really good, you know, how many, you know, hits you've had over the course of the season or how many strikeouts, that winning and statistics are not what youth sports should be about. I think, obviously, it's about fun. That's sort of the underlying message. But learning the right way to play, learning the movements, learning the techniques, learning, you know, to work with your teammates, you know, teamwork and leadership, I think that's much more important.
The last thing you want is to get hurt. And I'm thinking as we're talking proper techniques and skills, if we do that right, that should, like, minimize the opportunity, the chances of getting hurt?
Yeah, I really think that what happens with, you know, this pressure to win and this pressure to have the best youth team in whatever the sport is, I think leads kids to practice even more hours than their bodies are comfortable in and push through pain when they haven't rested or, you know, something may actually be an early injury, and that's where it leads to injuries. I think most youth sports injuries are sort of a too much stress without enough time to rest, and a focus on winning in statistics just amplifies that.
Our guest on This Week in America, Dr. David Guyer, he's an award-winning, double-board certified orthopedic surgeon and board member of the American Orthopedic Society for Sports Medicine. He's the author of That's Gotta Hurt, The Injuries That Change Sports Forever, and the website is drdavidguyer, GEIER.com. Click on by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. It makes you sort of stop and think a little bit about the role of youth sports. What is the purpose of youth sports? And I think you've touched on some of them, especially the teamwork and friendship aspect of it.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question sports have a tremendous number of benefits. Obviously, there's physical benefits from a health standpoint and lowering the rates of childhood obesity and so many other positive physical health benefits. But emotional health and social benefits of kids being with other athletes, young athletes, and learning to cooperate and the teamwork and all of that. But there's benefits from you know, personal well-being and happiness, less depression. There's benefits in terms of better academic test scores and success in school. There's even thought to be better long-term career success in kids that play sports. So I think there's a ton of reasons that we want kids to play. We just have to keep them healthy enough to do it.
We see a number of rule changes in youth sports, how it's evolved over the years, and equipment modifications and injury prevention programs. Are we doing enough to make it to make youth sports safer for the children who are playing?
I do think we're trying. I think you're right. The rules changes, I think equipment changes, all of the research we can do into that I think is good. I think we're losing ground, though, at the things that are relatively easy to fix. The, you know, how much we push these kids to play, you know, the year-round sports that you and I have talked about in prior shows, these kids that are practicing and playing, you know, 20 and 30 hours a week when they're only, you know, 12, 13 years old. I think in simple things like that, we're starting to, you know, that would be easy to change. We're not making the good progress.
You will find a lot of excellent information at Dr. Guyer's website, which is Dr. David Guyer. And again, that's GEIER.com. Information there as well on the book. It's an excellent read. We've talked about it on the program before. That's Gotta Hurt, The Injuries That Change Sports Forever. Doctor, thank you so much for being with us on the program. Much more to talk about. We will do it again. It's been very informative, and you can listen to all of these programs by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, or going to Dr. Guyer's website, drdavidguyer.com.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.